You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It is the day after Uber Tuesday, and joining us on the program today with the Uber Tuesday results, Huffington Post's Ryan Grimm. Is there any route to the nomination for Bernie Sanders? There is. It's very narrow. Very narrow.
Very cold.
And we say goodbye to Marco Rubio. He will be gone, but not missed. Donald Trump runs up the delegates last night. But we do see John Kasich's very limited victory speech. Bernie Sanders, no coverage. Zero. Very, well, not weird. Meanwhile, Obama nominates Merrick Garland, an old white guy, to the Supreme Court of the United States. And in terms of that contested GOP convention, Paul Ryan in as a possible nominee, and then out about a half hour later. Trump's free media, nearly $2 billion, ladies and gentlemen. All that and more. A hodgepodge. Look, the big stories today, obviously, are the elections last night. And as of this morning, about an hour ago, President Obama announced his nominee. Sort of a surprise nominee, certainly going to surprise Orrin Hatch, who just a week ago said, well, if he was to nominate someone like Merrick Garland, maybe we would consider that. But that's not going to happen because this is an election year. You know, even Orrin Hatch underestimates just how little Barack Obama seems to care about getting Democrats elected, or overestimates, I should say. But we will talk more about the specifics of that nomination. It's a little bit annoying. It's a little bit annoying for a number of reasons. We will talk about that as the show progresses. Maybe we'll talk about it with Ryan Grimm. I don't know if he has any thoughts on that. And we will go over the last night's election results and sort of, is there a path forward for Bernie Sanders and what does it look like? I mean, there is, mathematically speaking. He would have to completely outperform where he's been up to this point in a large way. But it's still possible, as opposed to a guy like John Kasich, who literally needs to win 110%, 110% of the remaining delegates to win. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm no math genius, but it is almost impossible to win 110% of anything unless it's something that is not actually finite and calculable, right? Like I could say, like, I'd like everybody in this office to give me 110% today, and I wouldn't really be able to measure it. Fortunately for some people, I'm not going to say who. I'm not even going to say that it's fortunate for some people. I can't even measure 70%. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, we have two sponsors of today's program, and they are very apropos. Because, as you know, there are basically two things I like to do outside this office. Occasionally shave and occasionally sleep. And March marks the third year anniversary for the existence of Harrys.com. We timed it with my child, the birth of my child. Harry's basically waited until my child was born. And then we basically, you know, we had the birthday celebration together. Saul had it with some executives from Harrys.com. They came over and celebrated their razors and had some cake. And yeah, and that's that was it. It was awkward because these guys wanted to talk about their growth charts and how well their product's doing, and Saul wanted to just basically say poop over and over again and eat cupcakes. But nevertheless, we had a great time because, frankly, I'm not going to say I like Harry's more than I like my child, but I will say that my Harrys.com razor is more helpful to me than my child. I mean, over time, I imagine it's gonna even out, because I imagine at one point Saul will be able to do, you know, maybe he won't listen to me. But with Harry's, I get the best shave I've had in a long time. Harry's blades are super sharp and provide a close, comfortable shave. Saul, he peed on me yesterday. Harry's is the only shaving company that has both amazing quality and low prices. Saul still poops his pants. German-engineered five-blade cartridges, close, comfortable shave, no cuts or burn, quality guaranteed, full refund if you're not happy. Saul, he just shows up. Man, can't, there's nothing you can do. You're stuck with him, period. Factory direct prices, cut out the middleman, ships right to your door. They sell their blades at half the price of the leading brand. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can just get them for half the price at Harrys.com? The starter set is an amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and three razor blades. Harry's doesn't like to discount their prices because they're already so low, but because they know I am stuck with two kids, Harry's will give you $5 off your first order with promo code MajorityReport. I don't understand the link there. It was a complete non sequitur, but that's take the deal, folks. Stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to Harrys.com right now. That's Harrys, Harrys.com. Enter code MajorityReport at checkout. Like I say, I occasionally like to shave, and I also occasionally like to sleep. In fact, I like to sleep more than occasionally, but that's basically all I'm allowed to do. And today's sponsor is also Casper Mattresses. They are obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. Now you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/majority. Use the code MAJORITY. If you don't have children, you spend about a third of your life sleeping. Let's make sure you do it on a good mattress. Casper brings together two comfy technologies: latex foam, memory foam. They got just the right sink and just the right bounce. And this is the best part, in my estimation. They have a risk-free trial and return policy. So they ship the thing to your house. You get to sleep on it for 100 nights, maybe 99. It's 100 days. So maybe you get 99 nights. And if you're not happy, they pick it back up. At the store, you get what? 60 seconds to do it. And everybody's looking at you. It's uncomfortable. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress, $950 for a king-size mattress. Compare that to mattress prices, great deal. So get $50 towards any mattress purchased by going to casper.com/majority using the code MAJORITY. Terms and conditions apply. All right, we're going to take a quick break and get on the phone with Ryan Grimm, get a sense of what's going on here. Of course, in many respects, the Democratic nomination is a lot simpler than what's going on the Republican side. God knows what's going on the Republican side. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Hey, just a reminder, folks, members don't listen to commercials, not on this program anyways. I mean, occasionally, I think we put them on in the past, but in the main. So if you are annoyed by those commercials, there's a way you can avoid that. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, subscribe to Two Dope Boys. It's gotten very good reviews, and you can write reviews on iTunes or on Podbay. iTunes is the best place to do it. You can go to subscribe2db.com. That is the latest of the Majority.fm family of podcasts. And speaking of the Majority.fm family, sort of an honorary member of the family is on the phone right now. He is the Washington Bureau Chief of the HuffingtonPost.com. I've heard of that. It's Ryan Grimm. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, hello, Sam.
You seem very excited to be here today.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
So, all right, let's go through this. Last night, obviously, Hillary Clinton had considered a very good night for her. Did she technically? I guess she swept, right? I mean, have they announced all of the races yet, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's not looking good in Missouri, which was the one he was really expecting to win and kind of holding out on. Not a pretty night at all. Cenk is a member of your family, right?
Cenk Uygur?
He had extended family. You know, he had a what I thought was a pretty fair analysis that I saw this morning. He said, look, Bernie Bros, you know, stop complaining about the headlines. Guy lost.
Right.
What do you want the headline to be?
Right.
It's painful.
Yeah.
It hurts. And there's a lot of reactions that people have and can have. But, you know, the first one is that you have to reckon with the loss.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there was a real sense that if we would see another Michigan-style, I guess, turnaround or surprise in a place like Ohio or Illinois, even where he was, you know, within a couple of points in terms of the polls in the days leading up. And the other thing that strikes me, you know, particularly looking at Illinois, where you had... it wasn't a question that there wasn't, you know, sort of like, I guess, a lefty push out there, right? Because you had Anita Alvarez, who was the prosecutor, the Cook County, the state's attorney, I guess, who was voted out pretty handily. So there was a real sense that that theoretically those people who would have voted for Bernie came out, right?
Yeah, and I think Bernie people need to reckon with this disturbing fact for them, which is that in Chicago, a lot of people came out and voted against Alvarez to throw her out. Huge lefty victory right there. And then cast a vote for Clinton. Like the math only works, for Clinton winning Chicago if that phenomenon happened, and it happened frequently. So that is a question then for Bernie supporters and people who are going to support insurgent lefty candidates going forward. How did that happen, and how do you make it not happen again? Because I think it's probably pretty hard for Bernie supporters to get into the head of somebody who showed up to vote to throw out Alvarez,
right?
And then did not also vote for Bernie, and so people need to figure out why that is and what they can do about it.
Well, I mean, give me your sense. I mean, if that assessment, at least, right, that the people who voted out Alvarez would be the type of person that we would anticipate voting for Sanders over Clinton, okay? Give me your sense of what happened there. I mean, because there seems to me there's multiple stories, right? I mean, that you could tell yourself about this. I'm curious what yours is.
I mean, I would say that obviously Bernie and Black Lives Matter didn't get off on the right foot. There was that Seattle protest where he lost the mic. There was Netroots. Underneath that were a ton of critiques about how he had never really thought about civil rights or race, because he's from this all-white state and all he talks about is class. And then you had TNC, very influential writer,
Ta-Nehisi Coates,
picking a fight with him over reparations and his refusal to support a plan for reparations. And then it wasn't until fairly recently that, they finally started pushing around the video of him and photos of him doing actual, desegregation activism and civil rights work and getting arrested in Chicago and otherwise. And then I think that certainly helped, but it didn't help enough. And I think, for a future candidate, they probably need to be, for the Black Lives Matter movement to get fully behind them, they need to be grounded more in this kind of new age intersectionalism. They have to constantly be talking about, how race and class intersect, and how racism itself, divorced from class, is oppressive. And Clinton picked up that very quickly, and used it really to beat Sanders over the head. She didn't propose any solutions to it, and in some ways there is no obvious solution, because if you say, well, it's not related to class, it's just racism, then you're kind of left with, well then what do you do,
right,
other than talk to people?
Is it also possible, I mean, and I guess, we don't have exit polling that gets this granular, but I wonder if, based upon the idea that Donald Trump, as of last week, was really the first week where people were sort of almost resigned to him being the presumptive nominee, or at least the guy who's going to be, short of a contested convention. And then that intersecting with the sort of the now explosion of images of, his sort of jackbooted thugs, or maybe not jackbooted yet, but thugs. I wonder if
jackhatted.
Yeah, I wonder if that doesn't, like, I mean, my sense is that you're going to be far more sensitive and worried about a Donald Trump, I think, if you perceive yourself already to be vulnerable to different elements in society, and that there's a perception out there, whether or not, one can measure it or not, that Hillary Clinton is more electable in a general. And it's just like, I'm not taking the chance because I can't have afford to have Donald Trump be president. I mean, is there any way to even measure that theory?
Yeah, we. I mean, it depends on how granular you need to get. Clinton is, you know, so we did some polling around this a couple months ago, and Clinton definitely was seen as more electable. Now, in our polling, very, very few people were saying that they were voting for her because she was electable. People were saying, a significant number of people thought that Bernie was electable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, something like 80% said Clinton was, 50% said, 50, 55% said Bernie was. But very, very few said that they were making their choice based on who could beat the Republican. And when we did our polling, Trump was looking pretty good then, too. Now, who knows if people are being honest? And also, you know, people kind of make their choices first and then they rationalize them afterwards.
Right.
It's not, you know, people don't really sit down with a blank piece of paper and write down, you know, a set of assets and attributes that competing people have and add them up and then make a rational decision. That nobody decides anything that way. It's more like I'm a Bernie.
Hmm.
Why? Well, let me work backwards.
Right.
What do people say about Bernie? Well, they say he's great for working people. He's great about income inequality. Then they'll tell pollsters, well, I wanted the candidate that was for, you know, dealing with income inequality, and certainly that's mixed up in it. But first they wanted Bernie, and that was just kind of an impulse. But I do think that there's some sense. I think you're right that there's some sense that Clinton is vaguely a safer pick.
Like right.
that you're not going to lose. You're risking less with her. You're gaining less and you're risking less.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that is, you're not reaching as far, so you don't, you know, you're not, it's a tougher chance of you falling. I mean, everything I contemplate now is in the context of, like, my kid wants to get up on a step stool and reach something.
Right.
And the further it is, the better chance that they're going to fall on their face, and then we're going to have to go to the emergency room.
Right. And that's our whole platform.
It is, isn't it?
You can't reach on top of the fridge. Don't even try it.
Right.
And then the kids over here are like, no, really, if I bring this step stool over and I get up on my tiptoes, I could totally reach those cookies.
Right.
And you're like, actually, that's true. You might. Yes, the math works. Like, you're tall enough that combined with the step stool and your tippy toes and your fingertips, you could theoretically reach those cookies.
Or
chances are you're going to fall on your face.
Right, and Donald Trump will
so
be president.
Clinton's like, don't even try it.
Right. All right. Well, so let's just, I mean, you know, there is still a mathematical possibility for Bernie Sanders, which is relevant insofar as when we get to the GOP side, you know, I had to watch John Kasich give his victory speech in Ohio, and it's not mathematically possible for him to win. At least,
right.
You know, he needs literally, you know, like I saw at first, I was like, people are making a funny joke on Twitter. He needs 110% of the delegates from here on in to win. And then I realized, that's not a joke. He actually needs more delegates than are even possibly available. But let's stay on this with Bernie Sanders. He needs to win in some, like, he needs to win, what, 80% of the available delegates, which means that he needs to win just about every primary by some very large margin. Is that right?
Right. That's right. And the other difference, of course, is that, you know, the power brokers on the Republican side don't want Trump to win.
Right.
Whereas the power, which gives Kasich an advantage, whereas the power brokers on the Democratic side don't want Bernie to win. And they do want Hillary to win. So Bernie can't, like, do any kind of magic where he keeps Hillary one delegate short,
right,
and then the power structure, you know, rides to the rescue and carries him and his revolution over the top. That's, you know, he needs to be like Trump and win it outright. So, you know, he can't and probably do it without even the super delegates,
right?
You know, because so, but yeah, that's right. And actually, I just checked specifically on Missouri and. It looks like he's down by 631 votes.
Wow.
At this point. But
well, and this is proportional anyway.
Everything in.
Right.
Well, it's proportional, but, you know, you get a lot of extra for winning. I think you get 9 just for winning. So like that, those 600 votes, you know, are, you know, those are pretty big, because they swing 9 delegates one way or the other.
And we should say that, though, like sort of generically speaking, or maybe not quite generically, but theoretically, the remaining primaries, broadly speaking, favor Bernie Sanders, at least in terms of the way they're composed and this and that, but they don't favor him that much.
Right. They would need to favor him, right, to the tune of blowout victories a la New Hampshire, or even maybe a little bit bigger than New Hampshire.
Wow.
All
right. So he's got, but he definitely has the money, right? I mean, he has the money to run and to go to the convention. What are the upshots? Like, what does he get if he runs until the convention? That is actually sort of like, you know, tangible.
So, yeah, according to people that I've talked to in his campaign, the thinking there is that, for one, there are, let's say he can't pull off the nomination at the convention. The other reason to go would be all of these floor fights over the platform and the planks in the Democratic, the planks in the Democratic platform. I don't quite get that. I think that is a giant kind of who cares. I mean,
because nobody listening to this knows what's on the Democratic platform.
I don't know. And do you think that, if Hillary is about to order a drone strike and somebody's going to say, well, you know, in the Democratic Party platform that was voted on in Philadelphia, you know, we said that we would only, you know, launch drone strikes under X conditions. And this doesn't seem to be in line with that. That you think that Hillary would say, well, in that case, put your guns away.
Yeah, but that's not the only value to it, right? I mean, for instance, like, you can go back 10 years ago and look at the, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect this because I remember talking about it at the time. If you go back, let's say 10, 12 years ago and look at the Texas state Republican platform,
yeah.
I would imagine that stuff that seemed outlandish when they voted on that 12 years ago is actually going to be, you know, is adopted by half or three quarters or 7/8 or all of the candidates who ran in the Republican primary. Like, it's not necessarily that it's going to constrain Hillary Clinton, but maybe whoever is Hillary Clinton's vice president will have to move in that direction, 8 years from now. I mean,
I think that is right. And so, you know, when these party activists have these fights, and when the left of the party wins these fights, then that sort of becomes codified as the conventional wisdom among Democrats going forward. And so, exactly. So if you have new candidates running at the county level or at the presidential level, the conventional wisdom that they're drawing from is more progressive. So in that sense, I do think it matters. And also, Bernie loves to get his message out on TV.
Right.
Like, he spent 20 plus years in Washington and wasn't invited onto the Sunday shows a single time until Chuck Todd invited him and won one of his first shows when he took over Meet the Press. And Sanders likes to have his issues in the conversation, and he likes to be the one that's bringing them to the conversation.
Who doesn't?
So that, yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Theoretically, that's why you go in.
I mean,
unless you're going in for the cash,
for sure.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, as long as he's still attracting attention to his issues, then he's gonna keep on.
Do you think there'll be any more debates on the Democratic side?
They seem to be. And Hillary seems to be pretty content with the town halls at
right.
this point. Less prep for her, less risk for her. You just go out and you and Anderson Cooper have a moment, and then you go off the stage, and then Sanders comes out and has his moment. And, less chance of falling on your face. And politicians, other than, say, Newt Gingrich, think of debates as places where elections are lost.
Right, exactly. All right, well, and we now know, I mean, that's a good segue to go into the Republican side. Donald Trump announced after the last debate, I mean, literally seconds after the last debate, he got off and he said to, I can't remember who it was, Chris Cuomo or somebody, like, I think we're done with the debates. I think we're done.
Yes, I was watching that moment.
And so he said he had a scheduling problem. He's going to talk to some a group of conservative Jews, I guess, which should be interesting to see how that resonates with his followers. Is he going to AIPAC? I don't know who he's talking to, but he had some speech. He said that.
Yeah,
he,
that's right. That's right. He was invited by AIPAC.
Yeah, blame the Jews. Good. That's good. That's a good plan for Trump. All right. Well, so let's talk about what happened last night. Kasich won in Ohio. Trump won everywhere else.
Speaking of close races, he won by about 1,700 votes in Missouri, where Cruz was expected to win, and out of that, picked up a ton of delegates.
Right, because it's winner take all, right?
It is. It's congressional district take all, and so in other words, there are, I forget how many members of Congress in Missouri, but if you win that district, you get all the delegates from that district, and so the only 15 have been awarded so far of the 52, because all the rest of the districts are too close to call, but he's looking extremely strong, and so he's going to rack up a ton of delegates there. He really racked them up in Illinois by just crushing everybody. 40-20, basically, Trump over Kasich, and then 40-30 over Cruz.
Right.
And then North Carolina, just like in South Carolina. He won, but not as badly, 40-37 over Cruz. He lost Ohio, and the anti-Trump folks were celebrating, and then he starts winning, Missouri, Illinois, and people are like, wait a minute, he's going to do just as well as if he had won Ohio.
I heard some interview with Kasich this morning where Kasich was saying, like, Trump was like living in Ohio, and I still beat him. And I'm like going, like, you actually literally live in Ohio.
Right.
Yes. You've been the governor there for 8 years.
Right. You run. You run Ohio.
Ohio may be the one place Trump doesn't have a house. But all right. So right. It seems to me, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here. There's two scenarios. Scenario one is that Trump reaches 1237, which is looking like there's a 50-50 chance of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's slightly different. And then
the betting odds put it at 46, so you're very close.
Okay. Well, and this is after what they spent like $25 million in the past or $35 million in the past 2 or 3 weeks ostensibly to stop him. And
right.
That didn't work. And every time he vanquishes, one of the candidates, he's sitting there with, Marco Rubio's scalp. And that, I think, sort of like titillates some of the Republican voters.
It fits his image as a winner.
Right. And the second scenario is he comes into the convention with like 1160. I'm making up this number. And Ted Cruz comes in with, I don't know, 700 or 600. And John Kasich comes in with, I don't know, 120 or something. And it goes into a contested convention, right? And so... And that, I think this, we're pretty familiar here with the, rule 40, you have to have at least 9 states worth of delegates to have won those states to go into contention, but they would probably change that rule.
Right.
Let me ask you this. It seems impossible to me. I mean, even if they go into the contested convention, and Trump today said basically, like, I'm going to ask my followers to riot if you guys do this. But
guess who controls the National Guard and State Police there?
John Kasich.
This is in Cleveland. He can just arrest them all.
He can arrest them all. He could just keep them from coming into the convention. All right, let's say they even did this. It seems to me that couldn't they also make a rule? I mean, The idea that you would not nominate the guy with 900 delegates, but you would nominate the guy with 1,200 delegates, but you would nominate the guy with 800 delegates or 400 delegates seems absurd. It seems to me that if they were to do this, they would have to have a rule that basically said, like, the Republican voters have rejected all of these people. They're all losers. And so we need somebody to come in who has not lost. Instead of saying, like, nobody won, we say they've all lost. And right. The Republicans have told us, the Republican voters have said unabashedly, we don't like these candidates. Bring in somebody else. And then, you know, I don't know, Mitt Romney rides in on Paul Ryan or vice versa. And, I mean, is there any other possible scenario? I mean, could they really, is there anybody in the Republican Party who thinks that they could appoint that they could elect in a contested convention the number two or number three delegate getter? And
well, part of it is organization, and nobody's more organized than the serial killer Cruz. So, you know, if he can get, you know, he's going to understand all the rules. He'll know which delegates are at play, how he can get to the unbound ones, how he can get to Kasich's, et cetera. And he could, if he could rally everybody together, if Trump is under 50 and then Cruz can convince everybody else to come along, and maybe it's, maybe it even is with, you know, to be acceptable to the establishment, it's Kasich at the top and Cruz as the Veep, which, you know, Cruz needs something to go forward. You know, if he loses this, I think he gets that he's finished. You know, this was his big shot. So maybe he goes for something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the wild cards is everybody in the establishment seems to think that these unbound delegates are up for grabs completely. But who knows? You might have pockets of Trump support in there, which, if he's close enough, could take him over the top on the first ballot.
Explain this delegates thing, because I saw something last night that I was reading somewhere, and I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember, but that when these delegates are actually chosen on the state level, you need to be sure that they're your guy. Right, that they could theoretically be like, I'm going to be a Trump delegate, and then just decide, like, once they get elected or appointed, like, you know what? When I said Trump, I meant Cruz.
Yeah, and
will you explain that to us? Because
we did a story a week or two ago based on a Facebook rant from an ill-advised Facebook rant from a Trump advisor in Iowa, trashing the national staff and Trump himself for not understanding how the delegate process works, and because Trump doesn't understand it and isn't interested in it, the staff had dedicated zero resources to themselves trying to understand it. So that could be a huge handicap for them going in, because right there might be people on the ballot who you elected as Trump delegates who actually by the time of the convention don't even like. Don't even like him. In 2004, I voted on the Eastern Shore of Maryland in the Democratic primary, and I wanted to vote for Kucinich, and he didn't have any delegates. There was nobody. Like in Maryland, it's different in every state. In Maryland, you had to vote for the actual people who would be the delegates for your person. And so you could vote for Kucinich, but then you get down, you have to choose delegates. And he didn't have a single person in my county who had stepped forward to
so you couldn't
to be
vote
a delegate.
For him.
So I kind of like split him, I think, between like Dean and Kerry or something like that. It turned out I was one of 11 votes in the county for old Dennis, so it didn't really matter very much.
I feel like we need a breaking news. Ryan Grimm exposed as a liberal Democrat.
Busted.
Busted.
Totally busted.
I just have to say, I'm sorry to interject, but this is the only other Dennis Kucinich supporter I feel like I've met in my life besides his wife.
There you go. Yeah.
The local reporter, the local reporter in the town, came up to me in a bar and said she was trying to find all of them. She's like, I think you're one of them, right? I said, yeah. I said, my mom was too. So that's
wow.
Two.
You just did like 25% of her work for her at that point.
Yes. So she only had 9 more to find after that.
Let me ask you this. In your conversations with sort of Republican leaders, like on the down low, obviously I mean, I don't want to. What? No, I'm not. I'm not like, give me like a broad.
That means something on something else in another culture in a two dope boys conversation. That means something.
Sorry
else.
About that. But back, you know, in Worcester, growing up, it just meant like quietly. Do they? Because it seems to me that the only thing worse than Trump being on the head of the ticket and losing, in terms of the Republican Party, would be Trump on the head of the ticket and winning. The Republic, you know, as becoming president in terms of the Republican establishment, right? Because it's completely like, as much as the Democratic establishment supposedly didn't like it when Clinton came in because it wasn't his town, he brought his own like crew of people in. Like, this would be a complete, you know, Roger Stone is the chief of staff or whatever, right? Like, this is a complete crap storm for them. Are they, you know, because it seems to me that if they have a contested convention, right, it's over. It's just like, it's over. There's no way whoever comes out of that process is going to win. There's going to be such acrimony that, you know, it's still going to be like late October when they're still having like fist fights on the streets of Cleveland, it seems to me. So, I mean, have you heard people who are basically just saying like, at this point, they're just trying to figure out how we save the Senate, and we're coming up with a strategy that will burn whoever the nominee is, but we need to save the Senate. Is anybody talking about that in any quarters?
Yep. They are, and there's a lot of talk about running a third party candidate, which I think at this point is more likely to happen than not if Trump gets the nomination, and that would effectively concede the election to Hillary, because you know you got your 40% for Trump, and then another, you know, 10% will go for.
So
you
know, who would
you
know, they?
Like Clinton, Bill Clinton won with what 43%.
43% of the vote. So who would they run to help their Senate chances? In other words, do they run somebody in like you know, not, I don't think Mitt Romney would do it, but would they run like a sort of like a supposed moderate, or would they run a hardcore conservative to draw people out? I mean, do they have a sense of who they would need to bring to the polls?
Mitt has been floated
by Mitt,
whether he would do it or not.
Actually,
about the
it was Tag
who endorsed,
who said it. Tag was the one who was floating it, and I just heard him say it. That's all. Okay.
Maybe Rubio. Or think about the people who endorsed Rubio. I've heard Nikki Haley's name bandied about. Susan Martinez. A lot of these people who have strong conservative credentials, but who are not anywhere near wavering towards Trump.
You know, and so Haley, the idea would be that that would bring those
Haley.
People that would bring those people out who the Republicans would be afraid would be sitting at home and then would hurt them down ticket.
Right. Right. And also it would make it less likely Trump wins, which is probably,
right,
you know, a feature of that plan, not a bug.
But couldn't these people get on the ballot? I mean, my understanding is that.
Well, there's the Constitution ballot. You know,
right,
if you think back to the last time you were in the booth, there's a dozen ballot lines on there.
So you just
so
basically buy
go
off
to organizers, right?
You buy right. off these parties as a way of like
right. You go to some obscure party that's never had, you know, money for folding chairs, and you're like, hey, how do you like Nikki Haley as your on your ticket?
She comes with X number of donors
right.
for your party.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is it too late to start a party? I mean, is this like a small business opportunity?
Yeah, I think it is too late. What would you call it? Freedom Party?
Yeah, of course, Liberty Freedom Party, or the Freedom Liberty Party, or America's Freedom Liberty Party, or
there
Liberty America Freedom America Liberty Party. Of course, are you kidding? Maybe family too in there.
FALP. Freedom America Liberty Party,
exactly.
The FALP.
All right, lastly, let me ask you about the Supreme Court. I know you're not a Supreme Court expert, although maybe you are. Maybe you just try
of
and
course.
You don't want to, you know, you don't want to come off as too knowledgeable about things. but what is your assessment of this pick? Merrick Garland, certainly Orrin Hatch, I think, is surprised of this pick, or is he? Was this a honeypot? When Orrin Hatch got out there, Am I using honeypot the right way? When Orrin Hatch went out there the other day and said, like, I would never do this, was he trying to trick Obama into doing it or what?
I think that, you know, it's increasingly likely that they're looking at either Trump or Clinton in the White House. So what are they doing? You know, why, you know, if Obama's going to be dumb enough to give them a very centrist white guy who's old, and their other choice is, you know, to get whatever ambulance chaser Trump throws up there, or to get whoever Hillary picks, the smart move out of those three options, which appear to be their only three options at this point, unless some miraculously Kasich becomes president or something, you go with the old white guy who's a centrist.
Right.
I don't know what the White House was thinking on this, but maybe that is the thinking, that this person's just conservative enough that they'll slip through. But yeah, right. Hatch's immediate response was, his quote was, "I'd probably be open to resolving this in the lame duck," because nothing says letting the voters decide then.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So wait a second. So let me just get this straight. One, you think this was a dumb pick by Obama, because, and I should say, you know, I am very pro tort lawyer around here myself. I think the audience knows this, but you know, ambulance chaser, I guess I'm going to take in a generic way that Trump would appoint. But you, I mean, this has no, I mean, am I right in reading this that, like, this has no value in terms of hurting Republican chances to maintain the Senate? That this really, the only people who would basically, this has any political sway over, are probably hosts of a Sunday morning talk show.
Well, if you can make the case to people that, for instance, this guy would be way better on Obama's immigration order than Scalia, which is an easy case to make.
Yeah.
Like, you can be virtually assured that this judge would rule in favor of the stalled immigration plan. You know, so that alone, you could say, look, give Obama his pick so Obama's immigration, you know, plan can go forward. That could fire people up. You know, the fact, and you'd have to think of other things like that, to fire people up, but it's certainly, you're not going to do it demographically.
And so it requires essentially an electorate who may be a portion of the electorate who may or may not be terribly inclined to go to the polls to appreciate the nuances of this D.C. Circuit judge's rulings and what they could potentially be.
Not necessarily. I think you could make the case that a vote for, you know, you go out and vote and support Obama's immigration plan.
Right.
Like, you want DACA, then you get out and vote.
I see. So you don't even have to. So the guy's not that relevant. It's just as long as they can make the case that this is a vote, and then as soon as you say that too, it prevents the Republicans from being able to actually even hold the hearing, right? Because at that point, then their people get freaked out.
Right.
So right now it's going to be basically a spin war over this guy's record and how he's going to vote, and everybody's going to be projecting on him in some way.
And the idea that they would do this in the lame duck is just so perfect.
Unbelievable. Well,
especially if Clinton wins.
Well,
then it's between this guy and whatever communist, you know, she pulls up from her Spartacist League days.
Right. But is there any reason to believe that, for normal people, is there any reason to believe that Hillary Clinton would be, you know, offering up somebody in, particularly in Scalia's seat, that would be some type of radical left winger? No, right?
But these are not normal people.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to confirm that.
Okay.
And we should say that in the event that Hillary Clinton becomes president, and let's say during the lame duck, 63 year old?
63, yeah.
He would be the oldest guy appointed to the Supreme Court in something like 40 years.
Yeah.
Assuming this guy gets appointed, then really you need to have Breyer and Ginsburg resign almost on day one, right? So that Clinton could appoint two new justices before the 18 election, because it's a much harder, going to be much harder for Democrats to maintain the Senate if they have it in 16.
It does raise interesting questions for people like Ginsburg, who about when they resign, because now they're setting this precedent that, you know, if you kick the bucket in year four, then you're not going to get a replacement. And once right. once you've established that year four is too late, then year three is no good either, because year three is just right next to year four.
Exactly.
And if you're not going to do year four, how can you do year three? And then year two, frankly, here comes the midterm.
Exactly.
How can you vote
before the midterm? You got to wait to hear what
the
people say.
Year one, this is right before the year before the midterm.
Well, year one, you don't have the experience.
Right.
You need some time in the office to be able to know who to pick.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Unbelievable. Ryan Grimm, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, ladies
and
gentlemen. Talk to you later. Ryan Grimm from Huffington Post. I don't know how much more comprehensive we could have gotten than that. I guess silence.
We even got Dennis Kucinich disclosures.
We got, yeah, exactly, man. This is a
did
huge
you vote? Did you
breaking.
Vote for him?
Did I vote for Kucinich in 2008?
Not in 2008. I voted for him. The first time I ever voted was in 2004, and that's I think that's when because I voted for Obama in 2008. I think I voted for Kucinich in 2004.
To be honest with you, I don't know if he was still in the race by the time it got to New York. I'm pretty sure I was registered in New York at that time. Nevertheless, I was not a huge Kucinich fan, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I mean, I liked some of his positions, but I did not find him to be a rigorous thinker.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, as I recall in that race, I backed Kerry, but felt like, you know, because I didn't think of Dean as an actual liberal or progressive, and I thought Kerry was a better bet as a candidate. And then I thought that voting for Kucinich might give, a touch of energy to whatever was the nominal left at that point in the party. So that was my thinking.
I'm quite sure 2004 that I was, I think Dean was gone by the time I got to New York, but I think I was, I think at the time my feeling was I liked the fact that Dean's was running on small campaign contributions, and I thought that was really important. I think my tendency is not necessarily to invest too much in the person who's running, but rather sort of like what is bringing them to the office. And I think I haven't really thought about that, but I think that tends to be, you know, why I find Trump so problematic, or really any Republican who gets nominated so problematic, is because there's a bunch of non-normal people who are supporting that person, and I don't want to empower those people. But we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. All right, going to take a quick break. Oh, you know what? Let me read these. I have two emails that I pulled that I wanted to read before we take a break. And I should tell you that I think both of these are from members, I believe. Maybe the first one is not. But you can be part of this esteemed, and for today, and maybe for the short future, we won't make it so exclusive. Today, we won't make it exclusive. I'm going to open this up to everybody. You can become a member of the Majority Report by simply going to jointhemajorityreport.com and becoming a member. It's, I cannot guarantee you this offer is going to be available tomorrow. So check it out today. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. You can use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. It's great coffee. It's fair trade, and all the, you know, it's a co-op owned. And then, of course, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Or if you want to buy through jet.com, you can do the same thing at majorityreportkickback.com. They're helping out with that diaper thing. I appreciated that. All right, I got these two emails because over the past couple of days in the members' half, we've had fairly extensive conversations about just sort of how we should approach Donald Trump. I guess I could have talked to Ryan about it because those guys, they wouldn't even cover him for except for in the entertainment section for a while. And I think that was sort of that was their impetus, I guess. This one is from listener Wayne. Just caught the 3:15:16 show. That would have been yesterday's show. And wow, one of the best to date. The interview was fascinating. He goes on to say, the discussion that followed in the fun half was also great. It was also the driving factor in making me write this email. Please keep your current format. Do not take Trump seriously. The idea that a five-day-a-week critical analysis of Trump from MR is going to change anything is frankly insane. His supporters and Republican supporters at large not interested in policy breakdowns in any form, so why are we suddenly going to be interested in some progressive critical takedown? Trump is not the story. The story is the environment that allows a candidate like Trump to flourish. Focusing on Trump is a disaster tactic. This is the part that actually interests me the most because this really does bother me. He writes, when he loses, the Republicans are going to link everything to him. The media will buy it. Suddenly you're fighting against the narrative of, oh no, systemic racism was just a Trump phenomenon and no longer exists. I do believe the Republicans can pull this off 100%. Yes, they certainly going to try.
This is like putting the Red Scare on Joseph McCarthy.
Right. 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 And that was the part that I really appreciate. This one is from Rob. As a long-term member, it's great you had an intro and retrospective debate on Monday/yesterday, but there is no need for it regarding Majority Report. Kelly's critique is bang on about the media in general, and you have been on point from day one. Calling Trump and his naked fascism as the perfect candidate for a GOP voter. But the show has also called the other scumbags up there for all their toxic behavior, political history, and corporate bias, something that the mainstream media has ignored. I love the show, all the debate coverage, and being the most informed dairy farmer in England. Thanks to the show. Don't stop, don't change, keep up the great work. So I think I picked that one out because he's a dairy farmer from England. So when people say to you, when people, you know, come up to me and go like, your show, man, you don't even talk to dairy farmers from England. And I can say, oh, yeah, I do. Sorry.
The way I interpreted that email. I'm just going to let that sit there for
dairy
a little bit.
Dairy farmers in England listen to our show. So take that. All right. 646-257-3920. I don't know. It's fun. Like, I mean, if you know,
you know what that dairy farmer was saying to us, saying he did a fantastic job covering Donald Trump. It's true. It's really true.
Yeah. But he has a British accent. I mean, theoretically,
not for purposes of that impression.
We also, you know,
British accent's hard.
Well, I mean,
by
look at
the way.
Dairy farmer.
It's hard work.
You know, one of the set designers. One of the set designers.
Do a proper one.
One of the set designers from Walking Dead listens to the show on a regular.
Yes.
Basis. I mean, you know, I hear stuff like that. It's like an eclectic mix of people, and then, like, I think the other 99% of our audience, IT guys. Just sitting around. They're pretending like they're doing work. Like, oh, no, I'm actually checking the stream. Checking to see if I'm on speedeasy.net. Trying to see if our download speeds are doing well.
Based on...
By listening to this show.
And Matt can speak to this too. But based on my Twitter followers that I've gained since the show.
Yeah.
It's extremely eclectic. It's not... It's definitely not 99%.
You know, people tend to they tend to adopt other because they don't want anybody at work to know that they're not. I mean, they get away with it a lot they can hide their tracks that they've been listening.
I don't know if they're stay-at-home moms or people like that. I mean, it's just a really wide range of people.
No, I know. I'm being a little bit facetious. We have British dairy farmers. Believe me, there's a lot between IT and British dairy farmers.
I believe he sent us a Christmas Twitter message. Actually, I remember seeing a cow in a Christmas hat. I think, unless I dreamed that.
Maybe you dreamt that.
Okay, all right, Matt, folks.
We're gonna take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. I'll turn on the IMs. Oh, they are on. Okay, see you in a second.